Welcome to Farmscape Online. I'm Bruce Cochran. My guest is Dr. Hyatt Frobos, the head nutritionist with Gestal. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Frobos.
Thank you, Bruce.
As part of a group sow housing seminar hosted by the Prairie Swine Center, Swine Innovation Pork, and CDPQ, you discussed the topic, capturing potential through nutrition. First of all, just how important is nutrition in both terms of cost and efficiency?
Well, nutrition comprises about 70% of the cost of a finished pig, and it's just as important on the sow side as we're setting the sow up to produce piglets. So when we talk about nutrition as a very high, really ranked priority in how we manage pigs today, that goes down from the gestating sow to the lactating sow all the way to the resulting piglets from those pregnancies.
How do the nutritional requirements compare between stalls versus pens, gestation versus lactation, from small to large groups, and according to parity, and what are the factors?
If we started with stalls versus pens, I'd say there's a couple highlights that we might talk about. In stalls, sows are known to perform a higher level of stereotypical behavior, which has a higher maintenance requirement because they're expending calories during those stereotypies. Additionally, they are not able to conserve body heat by lying together. They're usually lying individually on a, concrete floor, and so therefore expending more heat energy for thermoregulation. And so generally speaking, people typically assess a higher maintenance requirement to stalled sows than pen sows, and some producers have taken advantage of that by being able to lower the thermoneutral temperatures in the pen housing environment as a way to reduce energy costs. When we talk about sows by parity with regard to their nutrient requirements, young animals are still depositing their own growth tissue, particularly muscle and bone tissue and fat tissue, even up into their third parity. And so there has been a lot of work done in the past that clearly states that a P1 sow has a higher amino acid requirement, higher calcium and phosphorus requirement than, say, a P4 sow who has reached senescence or full maturity. When we talk about requirements of the sow in gestation or lactation, obviously we have some big differences there. In gestation, sows actually have a relatively low requirement for amino acids until they get into later in gestation when they're depositing more and more body tissue, musculoskeletal tissue, in terms of the fetus and conceptus that ultimately will be her litter. And at that same time, she's also preparing her mammary system for the production of milk. That being said, her metabolic requirements increase markedly when after farrowing because she's converting, she's basically a dairy cow at that point. And so we have much higher energy requirements, much higher protein requirements, because there's been a lot of work done that shows that the piglet is not the limiting step for growth typically. It's the sow's ability to produce milk, which is generally limited by the quality of the diet and her feed intake capacity. And usually these sows are just not able to eat quite enough feed to reach the full growth potential of these piglets.
Looking specifically at nutrition during gestation, what are the goals and why, and what do producers need to be focusing on?
I would say, first of all, execution has to be number one. In a lot of production systems that I go into, there's not an issue of whether the nutritionist knows what the sows are supposed to be getting or the manager knows what sows are supposed to be getting. It's at the slat level, are those sows receiving what they're supposed to be receiving? And that's true in stalls or pens, but in pens we probably give ourselves more opportunity to fail if we do not assign their body condition correctly, if we do not calibrate the box drops in a stanchion barn or a floor feeding barn, or if we don't calibrate the free access ESFs or ESFs, we could be applying the correct diet at the wrong level, either too high or too low, and then paying for it down the road in later gestation or in lactation. And a lot of times that results in sows exiting the herd because things weren't executed properly in gestation.
What are the potential consequences of getting that wrong, of either over-conditioning or under-conditioning, and what are the potential consequences there?
Yeah, fair question. So under-conditioned sows are ones that I see people pick up on a little bit more easily. Everybody, for the most part, even your lowly trained workers at the farm, recognize a thin sow needs to be addressed. Either she needs to be hospitalized or treated, or if she's not receiving enough feed, we need to increase her feed allowance. That being said, a sow that's too thin, especially on the backside of a farrowing, she's less likely to breed back. And if she does breed back, she's less likely to have a high number of ovulations. So therefore, her subsequent litter will be smaller. And if she's severely restricted from a nutritional standpoint, the subsequent litter will also have lighter birth weight as well. And she's going to milk less because she has less body reserves to draw off of in lactation. What I see as a more common problem or challenge from an execution standpoint is getting animals over-conditioned during gestation, in particular gilts before their first farrowing. We know that if gilts get too fat before their first farrowing, there can be fat tissue that deposits in the mammary precursors that ultimately become the mammary tissue, and this can limit her lifetime milk yield if she is too fat in the time period right prior to farrowing. But on a broader scale, there's plenty of research that's been done, a paper that I always reference is done by Malachy Young in 2004 that showed that sows in the fattest third of a group, I think those sows were over 21 millimeters of fat, at entry into the farrowing house, they not only had the lowest lactation feed intake, but they also lost the most body fat in lactation. And as a result, they weaned off thin, and they bred back and had a lower total born in the subsequent farrowing. And so getting that body condition right is extremely important on both sides of it. But what I find is too often happening in farms is getting sows over-conditioned, and besides all of these productivity issues, it's also a waste of feed and unnecessary expense.
What are the primary goals of nutrition during lactation, and what producers need to be focusing on and why?
Yeah, on the lactation side, really it comes back to, again, the point I said earlier that the piglet growth is limited by the sow's milk yield potential. And so generally in lactation, our goal is to maximize feed intake because we're assuming that that's correlated with milk yield. And so generally we're trying to get as much feed of a high quality lactation diet into these sows throughout lactation. But some problems that sometimes pop up are things like constipation. If we're transitioning diets, we're transitioning a sow from a restricted gestation diet to an ad libitum lactation diet, sometimes we run into some issues with constipation. Mastitis, metritis, and agalactia can be a problem as well if we maybe misapply lactation feeding. But in general, we're just trying to keep those sows eating, stimulate them to eat, get them up, and keep them healthy and eating. And so if we see one going off track, we need to respond to that quickly, because if they lose their intake, what's next is milk yield falling off and the piglet suffering.
Where do we see the greatest opportunities for nutrition to improve productivity and profitability in the sow herd?
Yeah, so I touched on several of these points during my presentation, but the areas that I find the most opportunity for in relation to gestation would be opportunities, especially as we transition to group housing, to potentially do a better job of feeding sows according to their parity. We know that sows do better when they're in cohorts with young or old animals. They're less likely to have aggression and removals, but we can also better match them to their nutrient requirements and save feed expense, particularly on the older sows. But also what's exciting is some research that's being done currently, and I would say is not concluded at this point, but the opportunity to use some of the new technologies like feed blending in some of these ESF and free access ESF systems to be able to precision feed a sow on an individual basis on an individual day of gestation. So we could actually, theoretically have a low amino acid, high amino acid diet, and alter that based on that sow's projected requirements, based on her parity, her back fat at entry, her projected litter size. All of those things could be incorporated into a model to potentially get higher productivity out of her, but also reduce our feed costs and improve our feed efficiency. Along with that, I think there's some opportunities when we talk about these type of feed blending systems to now be able to use targeted feed additives at specific stages of gestation, which previously was not commonly done because top dressing required a lot of manual labor, and the cost of these feed additives is usually prohibitive to where it doesn't make sense to feed it for the entire gestation period, but potentially a 2 to 4 week period at certain times might help with embryo survival in early gestation, such as omega-3s or folate or betaine in some cases. And in late gestation, there's opportunities to increase amino acid ratios that might help with the development of the fetal components. And so being able to top dress or manipulate these at specific stages of gestation is an area that I think there's some opportunity for.
And is there anything you would like to add?
No, I'd just like to say thanks for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you. Our guest has been Dr. Hyatt Frobos, the head nutritionist with Gestall. For Farmscape Online, I'm Bruce Cochran.